The survivors and bereaved of the Grenfell Tower fire, which killed 72 people, say they're still waiting for justice 5 years on from the disaster. The devastating blaze began on the fourth floor of the 23-floor block of London flats, but spread rapidly in the early hours of the 14th of June 2017. It was the worst fire in Britain since the Second World War. A public inquiry into what happened is due to conclude next month, with the Irish firm Kingspan among those awaiting its findings. RTE's Barry Lenehan is in London this week for a series of special reports to mark the fifth anniversary of the Grenfell fire. And Barry, you're at the tower itself this morning.
Yes, good morning, Claire. And as I look up into the West London skyline, the burned remains of the Grenfell Tower covered in a white protective sheet like a shroud. At the very top, a message daubed on black sheeting saying Grenfell forever in our hearts beside a green heart. And down at my own eyeline here, down at ground level, hoarding around the remains of the tower where messages are filling it up for the 72 people who lost their lives, the most horrific circumstances. 5 years ago next Tuesday. Among the messages just in front of me here, for the children of Grenfell, we are with you always and we love you. For all the lost children, you are always in our hearts. 18 children lost their lives here 5 years ago. Wreaths and a large heart shaped there as well, remembering those who died. And it started here in North Kensington, one of the richest parts of London, one of the richest boroughs in Europe, as a small kitchen fire. But it's estimated that within 17 minutes, the building had become an inferno, leaving those trapped inside 250 firefighters, 70 fire engines needed to bring it under control, hundreds left homeless and many more traumatised in this community. Now, investigations, as we know, subsequently blamed flammable cladding panels added to the sides of the building during a refurbishment with the spread of the fire. A criminal investigation was launched soon after the blaze, but no prosecutions, no arrests ever made. A public inquiry into what happened, that's due to be completed shortly, and the Cavan firm Kingspan, it was among those who gave evidence at the inquiry after its insulation material had been used in the block, and Kingspan told the inquiry how it had no role in the design of the cladding system on Grenfell Tower, where its K15 product constituted approximately 5% of the insulation.
And Barry, you've been speaking to an Irish survivor of the fire. How is he reflecting as this fifth anniversary approaches?
Yeah, Willie Thompson came here to London from Carlow Town, and he moved into Grenfell Tower on the 13th of June 1997, nearly 20 years to the day before the fire. Now, Willie lived here on the eighth floor with his wife and two daughters, and says the community here in this vertical village, as he puts it, was like family, and so next Tuesday's anniversary is difficult.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. It's something that we never look forward to. Every day we miss our friends. A couple of Irish, a really, really good friend of mine, one of my best friends in this country, Dennis Murphy. Dennis didn't come out. Dennis was moved three times on that night, from his own flat to another flat, and then to another flat, and another flat. Dennis walked past the stairwell to go to a flat that they put him in. We could have walked down the stairs, but they thought, no, go in there. They thought others, go upstairs, go up, keep going up, we'll be all right, we'll get you out. They never came out. At one stage, one of the leading fire brigade officers said, this is it, we can't go above the 11th floor, we just can't get up there. No, we'll survive it. 2 or 3 hours later, people started walking out of that building. If after 3 hours after that, people could walk over there, can you imagine how many more they could have saved if they'd gone up for them?
When you look back on what happened to Dennis in particular, is it anger, is it anguish, or how would you describe it?
Every time I speak to anyone about Dennis, I get really angry because he could have been saved so easily on numerous occasions.
You yourself had a lucky escape, if you will.
If there had been no smoke coming from the lifts that night and the smell, I don't know if I would have got out, because I think I would have went back into the flat.
It was a stay put policy, wait for personnel to arrive, but you saw the smoke coming out of the lift and thought, hang on a second, this isn't good.
Yeah, I thought, could be in trouble here. And it was more the smell than the smoke, and the smoke was weird too. It was like two layers of smoke, white smoke underneath and thick black smoke above it. I remember thinking, how the hell is this thick smoke sitting on top of the small smoke? But it was the smell that frightened me. So we got out, and the stairway was pretty clear. There was a bit of smoke, but you could, by this stage, you could smell the fire. Until we got about to the fifth landing, fifth landing on the stairwell, it really was starting to get really bad then. But I stood on a fire hose, I twisted my back, and I didn't know I was going to make it. I knew I was going to struggle to get out. But we did get out. We got out, and our dog, he was the only canine survivor. But he's since passed. I remember coming out, and I looked to my left and up, and that's where the fire was over here in this corner. And from where we were, we could just see a thin flame going up the side of the, on the corner of the building, where it came out from the window. But the panels started popping. So we walked up and up this little hill, and I turned. That was the first time I turned to look at the building, and I just couldn't believe what I was looking at. It was an inferno, and my first thoughts were, what the hell is burning? I just couldn't understand what was burning.
Instinctively, you knew something wasn't right here.
Yeah, I worked on buildings for years and years, and I knew concrete doesn't burn, so I know the actual structure of the building isn't burning here. So the only thing that could be burning is the product that they enveloped the building with. The ugly word cladding came into a conversation, I think, the following day, and that's what frightened me on the night. We were so ignorant of what was on our building. Do you know what I mean? We just did not know what was going on. Honestly, Barry, I was dumbfounded. I was stuck to the ground. I just couldn't move, and I couldn't fathom what was burning and why the staple policy was adhered to. Why they didn't go in? Why the fire service didn't go in and empty the building?
And your community in there, your friends screaming back at you as well.
Up to the top floor, you had families that I knew very well. The power was still on in the building. The lights on their phones were flashing. They were screaming, but with sea faces and windows. I often try to imagine what was going through their heads. They had their TVs on this other building, and yet they were still being told to stay.
Now, Willie Thompson's now to the fore in the battle for justice with the survivors and relatives group Grenfell United. He's warned government ministers here in Britain directly that another tragedy is waiting for them in the post, as he puts it, due to a failure to update fire safety and building regulations. He's also had stern words with Boris Johnson. Willie attends the public inquiry almost every day, and he also regularly returns here to Grenfell Tower to remember those he lost.
Might sound silly to people, but I like to go back and chat with some of my friends. Just in my own mind, to satisfy my own mind that they're not being forgotten. And I find it slightly cathartic just to be sat there on my own, chatting away, and I'm sure people passing by must think I'm a nutter, but there you go.
Your wife and daughters, they went back to the apartment itself, did they?
My two daughters went back. Laura and Cathy went up to the flat because our flat wasn't completely destroyed. We went up to see if there was any things we could salvage, as in mementos, photographs. Sadly, stuff was stolen from our flat. A watch that Laura saved up for me. Laura was at uni, and she saved up and bought me a lovely watch that was stolen. And Cathy, my other daughter, had a big glass jar, and that was money that she was saving for uni. That was stolen. Ours wasn't the only flat where stuff was stolen from either.
Why do you come to the public inquiry most days?
I just want them to know that we're there and we're watching them. People are listening to what they're saying, and I just want them to know that we are watching them. It's all about justice. That's what this whole ordeal is about, justice. We need justice for the people that we lost. I just want to hear the judge bang the gavel and just say guilty. And my one wish for every one of them after that then is that every night, the rest of their lives, that they get a visitation. Some of them, Grenfell, gets into their head, and they can never lose it.
Do you think you're far from that day and getting that wish?
I think we're a good bit down the road. I cannot see any other verdict but guilty for those at the highest level. That's what I want. I want justice. That's all. I just... guilty. I want to look them in the eye when they hear that word. I want to be there looking at them. If I can get to the guilty verdict, the man above can take me in. I'll be happy.
That's Willie Thompson, a survivor of the Grenfell Tower fire, originally from Carlow, as you can hear. Now, what about the people who lost family members in the fire, Barry? What have they been telling you?
So 52 of the 120 flats in Grenfell Tower housed disabled residents, and 15 vulnerable people were among the 72 who died. These people didn't have an evacuation plan. Some were housed towards the top of the tower with a stay-put fire policy. Among them, it was Hesham Rahman, whose picture adorns the unofficial memorial here this morning. He had mobility issues, but liked living at the top of the tower, as he said it brought him closer to God. And his nephew is Kareem Mosili.
My uncle Hisham was a massive part of my life. I grew up without my parents. I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandfather died when I was young. So he very quickly took over the role of like a father. And for him to just lose his life the way he did, I guess I still haven't sort of come to terms with it. I woke up for work early that morning. I was getting ready and my wife screamed. I remember the scream like it was yesterday. She'd never screamed like that before in her life. And she just came and showed me this live sort of footage, or this video footage of Grenfell completely engulfed in flames. And obviously the first thing I thought of was to call Uncle Hisham. And I called him and his phone was ringing. His phone kept on ringing up until the early hours of the morning. That told me that he was okay. If his phone was ringing, then surely he still wasn't in the building, but unfortunately he was.
The noise and the smell, the sight, it's something that never leaves yourself or other people in this community.
I smell it every day. Having all of this burnt sort of material all over me, I was still in sort of my work clothes, still not realising and understanding the severity of the situation, even then when I was turning up. The tower was still engulfed in flames from the top floor till about two or three floors below it. So I could see the flames coming out of his flat, and it was like that for a good couple of days. Chaotic. It was absolute just madness.
I know you feel strongly about those first few hours, those first few days, that they weren't handled properly by those in charge.
Whatever authority was there, whether it was the police, when it was mainly just the police, they weren't there to help us. They were there to almost contain us. The local authority were non-existent. I spent those first few weeks constantly running around doing the same sort of route over and over again, hoping, well, maybe this time I'll see somebody that knows something. To this date, the council have never reached out to us about the death of Uncle Hisham.
How did eventually you find out that your uncle had passed?
I constantly held on to the thought that he made it out and he's unconscious somewhere. It was only really when I saw that t-shirt from one of the firefighters put on a railing, and it said something along the lines of, you know, to everyone on the 21st floor and above, we're sorry, we couldn't get to you. And it was at that moment that I sort of realised, oh my God, I think he's dead. He was technically missing until his body was identified, and that process took a couple of months. And then in September, he was laid to rest. So it was just, I mean, from June the 14th up until sort of the end of September, limbo, not knowing anything.
How does your family go through that long, drawn-out process?
It was awful. I just can't think of any other words. There were days I slept in my car because I couldn't go home. I couldn't go to my grandmother's house. I couldn't face the family because I felt that it was my responsibility to try and find out what happened to Uncle Hisham, and I didn't know. I'd stay in my car sometimes. I couldn't go to my grandmother's house and see her the way she was and not have anything for her. So it was just a completely just awful, terrible time. I mean, I think about it every day. It stays with me every single day.
Now, like Willie, Kareem is heavily involved in Grenfell United, and he says given the lack of arrests, prosecutions or meaningful change since the fire, Tuesday's fifth anniversary brings with it a stark reminder of the long wait for justice.
We vote for these type of people who insult our dead families publicly on radio, can't even get the numbers right, can't even say Grenfell right. These are the people we vote for, we elect. So yeah, I have lost faith in humanity when it's not the leaders that are the problem. It's us who have allowed this system to happen. And again, we look at the past 5 years. What real changes have there been? What have our leaders done to make sure Grenfell doesn't happen again and the people who lost their lives have justice? Nothing. We're no closer to the criminal investigation. There's been no accountability. No one's going to prison.
Not one single arrest has been made in relation to what happened. How does that make you feel?
Absolutely disgusted. Disgusted. Think about it this way. Let's just say the council get full blame and get slapped with a massive fine. Who pays for that? We do. The taxpayer. So effectively, we paid for the death of our families. People keep thinking that Grenfell was this freak accident that happened randomly. No, 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 no. Grenfell was easily preventable. The signs were there years before. Warnings missed. I mean, the government have known the dangers of these materials since 2002.
What is justice for you?
Obviously, accountability. But also justice comes in the form of change. Change in the way we treat people who live in social housing. Justice is changing in the fire safety regulations. Justice is also making sure that buildings like Grenfell don't exist anymore. And unfortunately, 5 years later, they still do. That's justice for us. We can't go to sleep and get a good night's sleep knowing that we might wake up seeing another Grenfell.
How much has this community changed since the events of 5 years ago?
We had a life before Grenfell and a life after Grenfell. No one's ever going to be the same. People will be broken for a long time, if not forever, for what they witnessed and what they experienced and what they still experience today. It's like torture.
That's Karim Musili ending Barry Lenehan's report at Grenfell Tower in London. More from Barry on that anniversary on Drive Time this evening and later this week, including a look at the public inquiry and its Irish links.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.